harmony and the principles of pioneering with me. So please, all welcome, David Oliver.
I'm just going to give about 25 minutes or so on some of the principles of panurhythmy, which is the sacred dance devised and choreographed and music written by the Bulgarian sage Peter Dunov, whose dates are 1864 to 1944. And he was not only a sage who gave 7,000 talks between 1900 and 1944, 150 volumes in Bulgarian. That's one of the reasons why I learned Bulgarian. I haven't read all 150 volumes, I have to say. But I did learn the language, because I think if you learn the language, then you get a better understanding of what the terms exactly mean. So the word bog, which is God in Bulgarian, I mean, it sounds different, but it has a sort of different feel to it. The word lyubov is love. That's different from love. L'amour, if I said l'amour, die Liebe. Each language suggests something slightly different modulation, I think, of the word. And so it's quite important. And so actually in the mountains in Bulgaria, you'll occasionally find people who will have arranged stones, then they'll say bog e lyubov. And you'll be able to read that on the ground. It's just been read. Sometimes you have these similar formulas just cut into the rock when you're just walking around in the Rila Mountains. And I'm not going to say very much about his life, because that would be too long. But what I am going to do just now is just play you some music. So I need to come out of this into this, and this is Neva Sanzu, and it's played by Ioana Strativa, who's on your left here, and somebody who I don't know on the piano, and this will just give you a kind of spirit of Peter Dunov through his music. Ioana Strativa is a concert violinist. Thank you. that gives you the kind of tone of his music, I think, which is very sublime and beautiful. And he was in fact a violinist himself. And so let's go back to the PowerPoint here. And he composed 200 songs. And one of the interesting things is that many teachers leave mainly words, whereas he was able to leave music and songs and movement as well as words. That's just what I'm going to explain to you just now. But just to put this in a little bit of context, there are many people these days who write about the evolution of consciousness and the different phases of consciousness and the phases of development of culture. And so you get, and I'm not going to go into this in any detail, I've done this in other lectures, you get cyclical views, you've got the Irvin Laszlo view, shifts from one mode to another, if you like, the different colours of spiral dynamics. Power versus Force, David Hawkins, this is a book which I reviewed about 18 months ago, which some people have been telling me to read for about 10 years, and I finally got round to it, and I strongly recommend it to you. The power is the inner spiritual power, and the force is what generates its own resistance. So violence is force, but spiritual power transcends and includes these polarities. Anne Behring's book, many of you know, Dream of the Cosmos, Michael Schacher's book, Global Awakening, and the Peter Dunoff, Bain Saduno take on this is the evolution towards cosmic consciousness. I should explain, and some of you may have read a review I did in the last issue on Peter Dunoff and Steiner, and that was actually the review of the month in the newsletter as well. And so if you've taken some of that in, you'll know that they were contemporaries, and they were both working within a broadly Christian tradition, but in a very mystical sense. They knew of each other. And one of the main disciples of Dunoff was Boyan Boyev, who started off as a student of Steiner. And Steiner told him to go back to Bulgaria, you know, to study under Peter Dunoff, under Bain Saduno. So Bain Saduno is his... I should have put you onto that slide. That's his spiritual name or spiritual identity, possibly an overshadowing, if that means anything to you. And I think what we're seeing is broadly speaking, some shifts of emphasis going on. And these are very great generalizations, from separation to wholeness emphasis, from fear to love. There's a lot of fear around, and fear is used by the media to whip up interest in the negative. From competition to partnership and cooperation, from greed to caring, from outer to inner authority. This is the violence or force into power, which I mentioned. And then also individual to universal. We're becoming more universal in our outlook, which we need to. So if you put this in the Peter Dunoff scheme, if you like, the panurhythmy and the exercises, which I'll mention and which I'll do tomorrow morning for anybody who would be interested in joining in, there is this... movement in life of from the one to the many, and then the many back towards the one. This is the process of involution and evolution. And you see this most clearly in the part of the panurhythmy which is called the sunbeams, which is the second part of the panurhythmy. And in the sunbeams, you've got the symbolism of going round in a circle, but also escaping from that circle. And then you've also the moving towards the centre and the moving away from the centre. And this is, if you like, the movement of life. And the way that he saw this, and this is written up in one or two of his books, and is the evolution from primitive collective consciousness, which is Lévi-Bruhl idea of conscience collective, to individual consciousness, the consciousness maybe of the narrative self, to collective consciousness, which is more a political concept in terms of solidarity, to cosmic consciousness, where you realize that everything is one. You are in it, we're all expressions of the same one. So altruism follows naturally. And to divine consciousness, the consciousness of the seamless spirit, which is unity known and felt, not just known, but also felt, intuited and felt. And that means that the golden rule follows naturally from that, because you feel yourselves to be one with everyone and with everything. And so you act from that place. Now, applied to culture, he saw that there were these four degrees of human culture. And actually, if you look around the world, you can see all of these in different measures, in different places. So the degree of violence, force, domination and power, which you see a great deal of, and the narrative around Russia and Putin is obviously relevant there. Threat and control of law, but that's not just based on violence. The universality of justice. And then what he was really about, which is the culture of love, the life for the whole, and the degree of love that is a force in the mind when you embody it. And this is what Gandhi is talking about here. And the principle in the spirit, and what he means by that, is the reconciliation of opposites. And you'll see that in the movements of the panurhythmi, which correspond to the polarities of the human body, you've got right foot, right hand, left, masculine, feminine, up, down, feet, head. So you've got these polarities working with the principles that I'll come on to in a second. And so Gandhi says here, love is basically not an emotional but an ontological power, the essence of life, the dynamic union of the separated. And that's a very powerful statement. And of course, it goes way beyond what one would understand as love in a more sentimental sense. And the panurhythmi was for him something which was very much about the renewal of culture. And these are the principles which he associated with the renewal of culture, the goodness. And you don't hear much about goodness these days. Although what's interesting, in my work with character and young people, the Jubilee Centre, which is the main centre in the world, I think, for research into character, and they're using this term virtue. And so they're bringing back the notion of virtue, which has really got lost in the last 30 or 40 years, based partly on Aristotle and virtue ethics. So goodness fits in there, and you'll see it in the next slide as well. Justice, higher noetic reason or intuition. Harmony, which is what our weekend is about. Fraternity or sorority, if you want. Freedom and cosmic love. And so these are all woven into the movements of the panurhythmi, as are these five principles of the pentagram. And the pentagram is the third part of the panurhythmi. There are three parts. There's a 28 movements in the first part. Then, as I was explaining, there's the sunbeams in the second part. And then the third part is the pentagram, when you actually dance the pentagram, the five sides of the pentagram. And these are love, wisdom, truth, justice, and virtue. And love, obviously, associated with life, with the heart, with peace and joy, wisdom, light in the mind, truth, combination of love and wisdom. So you see with some of these movements like this is ascending. You're using the polarities of the hands and the feet, and that stands for the combining love and wisdom together, but then moving forward in truth. So you have this as elevation, for instance. And so if you do these movements consciously, as I'll explain in a moment, then you appropriate the energy of what it is that you're actually expressing. So I just explained that. this the triangle, the idea of us developing our hearts, developing our minds, and also developing our wills. So feeling, thinking, acting, and these are just a few adjectives associated with these three principles. And the important thing about Dunov, from a kind of spiritual tradition point of view, is that he wasn't about a belief system. He didn't say you've got to believe propositionally this, that, and the next thing. He said what's important, especially these three principles, principle of love, principle of wisdom, principle of truth, and then the virtue and justice. And so embodying these is really what it's about. And if you look at the great sages of any tradition, you'll see that this is what they embody. So going on to the Panurithmi, this is an extraordinarily powerful mountain. This, you can see him in the centre here. I'm going to play you a little sequence of Panurithmi at the end. You'll see the peak there is called Haramiyata. And it's a very, very powerful place, you know, to go and sit on the top of. I mean, for those of you who are sort of sensitive to energy, you really get a very good charge up there. And this is the place below, where I most like doing Panurithmi. So here's a picture that I took last summer of the fifth lake. And on the right, in the sequence of Panurithmi you'll see in a moment, this is the big field there above the fifth lake, and you can get 1,500 people. That's what it was like last summer, 1,500 people doing Panurithmi on the 19th of August. And it's an amazing thing, as you can imagine, just feel a part of. And as you'll see, there's some thistles in the foreground there. Just managed to catch those on the way up the mountain. Now, what does it actually mean? It's the great universal harmony of movement in the whole cosmos. So Panurithmi is not just a sacred dance, you know, choreographed by Bain Saduno. It's the movement of everything in the cosmos, from the planets to the movement of light to the beating of the heart to the flight of birds to the movement of the sap in the trees to the unfolding. So the pan part means the whole cosmically creative and stands for the masculine. The you is the true, the supreme, the feminine, the receptive. And in his system, the feminine is not just receptive, and which it is in yin and yang. Yin is receptive, the creative and the receptive, but also the constructive, because it's the feminine that builds the form. And so as an example of this, number 14 is weaving. And so this is the movement here. And not only do you weave this movement like that, but you weave in and out with your partner. And when you, as here's the Earth Pilgrim, just arrived. Well done. just at the right moment. And then the rhythmi, obviously, is the organizing principle and periodicity. And that really speaks for itself. And it's not, it's before you ask the question, it isn't anything to do with eurythmy, which is Steiner's invention. The panurythmy is a choreographed sequence of movements with music. And then the principles of the panurythmy, and again, that I could say a lot about these, but I'll just go through very, very briefly. These are the principle of intelligence, and also intelligence in nature, principle of correspondence between thought, the feeling and a gesture. So look at this one, giving. So that's obviously giving. But the giving is also receiving. Because if you're a source coming out of the ground, you need to receive before you can give. We're actually all like that. We need to have to plug into something in order to give out. But the very act of giving out actually energizes one so that more energy can come in. So you have this correspondence. You have obviously the principle of vibration or movement. Everything is in movement. Principle of polarity and duality, which I've been referring to. Principle of rhythm, cause and effect, and unity and relatedness. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that, because the reciprocity, when you're in the circle of Panurithmi, there are three relationships that you have. The relationship with the earth by the feet, and you would normally dance it in bare feet. The relationship with each other, the other dancers, the horizontal, and the relationship with the spiritual world, if you like, or the invisible dimension. I've said heaven here. And so all levels are engaged. The physical is engaged, the spiritual and the divine, the body, the soul and the spirit, all engaged. And the divine is seen, symbolized as the sun, and so the part of the ritual in the mountains is greeting the sun in the morning, and I've got a picture on my iPad that. We'll want to see that later. But it's also the rising of the sun in us. And so the gesture for the rising sun is this. So you go from the heart, and then you go up over the crown chakra, and then you spread the light, prashta svetlina, and then you bring joy for light, which comes back into the heart. And so again, when you're doing these movements, you can see how a thought, a feeling, and a gesture actually come together, which makes it all the more real. And so obviously there are physical effects in terms of when you're doing these movements, now you're strengthening the body, and there are all sorts of other movements as well. And he explains that there's like it's almost a sort of energy accumulation going on. Again, you'd have to experience this, you know, for yourself in order to understand it from the inside, rather than my just telling you. And I think there's something about being in harmony and moving in harmony with the music and other people. Which is very, very symbolic for our time, because we do need to move together, and to as a collective, and so the panurhythmy is something that can symbolise everybody making their own contribution, you know, to this overall renewal of rhythm, if you like, so the first movement, just again give you an example of the well, let's put the opening of the bud here. It's awakening, and so this is the movement here, and if you think about the movement that's going on in the trees and the flowers at the moment, it's this exact movement. And so how is we can also make that movement in the spring? We can open up like this, and the other thing, and I was put in mind of this when. I did a weekend with Sir George Trevelyan in Ireland about 25 years ago, and we had about 70 people doing panurhythmy out on the lawn, and there was a clairvoyant there, and she said, "God, this is absolutely amazing. It's just there's such an incredible amount of light, you know, being generated by this collective effort, as it were, this collective endeavor." And so to the extent that you're really conscious when you're doing the movements, you are also transmitting this impulse of giving or impulse of reconciliation, which is this gesture here, or the impulse of liberation, of liberating yourself from your limitations. And so you go through all of these thoughts and feelings and gestures. And in doing this, you're also developing your spiritual capacity. Now, this is a quotation from Ben Saduno himself. "Panurhythmy is the key to my teaching, which brings peace to human souls. It will illuminate the consciousness of those beings who dance and implant in them the graft of love. And the world grafted from within." I love that phrase. "The world grafted from within," because that's what we can do, we can be. "Will acquire a new light and new aspirations, from wars to peace, from hatred to divine love, from egotism towards self-abnegation, which is the culture of love." And I thought I'd just put in at this point an interesting remark by the historian Arnold Toynbee. And he's best known for his extraordinary work, The Study of History. But he wrote he gave the Gifford Lectures, and he wrote a book called Experiences, where he's very personal about his understanding of life. And he says this: "Love, as we know it by direct experience in living creatures on this planet, is also present as a spiritual presence behind the universe." I mean, Peter Dunoff could have said that, and so could any other mystic. "Love is the only spiritual power that can overcome the self-centeredness that is inherent in being alive." And Schweitzer would have said something exactly the same. This love that is a form of self-denial is also the only true self-fulfillment, as I'm sure many of you will agree. And I'm just going to go out of this again and show you the first day of spring, which is about 6 minutes. And it'll just give you a sense of what it's like being in the mountains and doing the panurhythmy. a bit of an idea. This is all on YouTube. And so if you're interested in listening to this, then the link is there. And there are various different versions. But we had last summer, when I was out there, we had four circles on the 19th of August, which was the main day. And you might have noticed that they've got stones marked there, so that you go in a circle, because if you don't go in a proper circle, then you've got two centres, and that symbolically means you've got things against each other. So this is all quite carefully done, you know, with huge bits of rope and things. And what was hilarious actually last summer was we had a sort of military person with a flag. You know, because you've got 1,500 people trying to coordinate, it can get out of control. So he would go, "Hey!" just at the point when we were meant to start. And people were just getting hysterics. No, it really was. And this is the camp in the middle of August. And if you want to know more about that, you can let me know. Then I'll just finish by... saying that I, tomorrow morning at 7:45, if any of you would like to learn some of the initial exercises, and we could do a little bit of that as an alternative to Peter's meditation, and you have to bilocate if you want to be in in both places. Very difficult, exactly. Yeah, but it's either the movement, like sitting still, or you like to do some movement. It'll be out the front here. So go out through the reception and just past the wall, and this nice area which we've used in the past. And if you're seriously interested in doing a little bit more of this, then I am doing a course later in the year where near the place I'm living. So, and you'll get details of that. That's the web thing, but I got a few bits of paper. So I hope that's just given you a little bit of what the French called an aperçu of the music, the movement, and the way that panurhythmy is a force for harmony, if I can put it that way. Thank you very much.
To take a few questions. Yes, we don't want things to get too late.
A few questions.
Pina Bausch,
yeah.
No.
Oh, sorry. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Sorry. And what was... she died about 4 years ago, but a very phenomenal dancer. And what was very interesting, as soon as you put it on, a lot of her movement must have actually come from him, because one of her main movement sequences was this, in actual fact. And she would work with lots of about 10 or 15 or 20 kind of lines of people working through.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting, again, with, you know, where things come from.
Well, yeah, and also the other thing, and this is like the sort of experience of it, there was a man just in front of us, and it was all completely wrong, you know, and you've got to get, of course, you then get... You're tempted to get irritated. And it's just interesting to watch yourself getting irritated. So let it go. You know, he's doing it. It's his thing. And then when the circle actually started going slightly wonky, what was really interesting was just to see this large number of people just self-organizing. And so it got back into the right thing. So if it got too cramped and there wasn't enough room, then it would just move out a little bit. And so there was this nice sense of self-organization going on in the sort of macro movement. But it's a discipline, though, as you all know, you know, just remain focused in the present and remain focused on exactly the movement you're doing and the music and moving with the music. And then when you can do that, then you just lose all sense of time and you're just in the flow.
Gurdjieff,
exactly.
Who,
yeah.
Also used music and dancing. And
I think they would have been aware of each other, but I know there wasn't the connection between Dunhoff and Steiner. Well, Dunhoff and Gurdjieff that there was between Dunhoff and Steiner. I don't think. But you're right. And what's interesting, when I was researching this book a long time ago, and I found that the Christians really reacted broadly against dance because they thought it was sort of bacchanal and sexual orgies and, you know, Greeks getting out of control. And they just sort of didn't like, so it was really shutting down the physical. And the person remarked that what was all that was left of dance was the procession of the priests coming into the church and going out again. And one doesn't really think of that as a dance, but it's a movement, I suppose.
Yes. Just one comment on that. There's the apocryphal Acts of St. John. I don't know if you know Holst's The Hymn of Jesus, which is based on the divine yin dancing, What I Shall Do. But of course, it's one of the New Testament apocrypha, one of the books that was left out of the New Testament when it was compiled. But there must have been some tradition about that went into the Gnostic movement.
Yes, I'm that's highly probable. Mm. Well, I mean, the feminine was taken out of the Christian church as well, and that's all coming back now too, as I'm sure you're aware.
Just a curious comment in that you didn't mention a lot about emotion. You talked about love and rhythm. But when I was watching the people watching it, the woman playing and the people dancing, they seemed to simultaneously be both smiling and crying. So there was this sort of smile of sadness. And I don't know, you know, it seems to span those extremes. I don't know if anybody else noticed that. And in the music, I could hear both joy and sadness.
Yes.
I think it
actually very much depends on the particular movement. Because one of my favourite movement of all is called How Happy We Are. And part of the gesture, you do this. You literally, you know, it's literally reaching your hands up in joy and with your partner, and the that's an amazing feeling. And the musicians are really good at that one because they've worked out about four or five different variations, and so they just really enjoy playing it. John,
anybody who has practiced or has begun to be interested in Tai Chi will know some interesting similarities here. I mean, in general philosophical terms, here's a very strong symbiosis between the movement of the individual and the harmony of the universe,
yes,
the cosmos.
Yeah.
And all the movements are designed to identify the individual practitioner with the movement of nature, particularly with animals, but with nature as a whole. And some of the most simple, straightforward movements from Tai Chi and also from Qigong have this sense, which I do practice almost every day, which is a sense of unity with the cosmos, in which you raise your arms up like that to the cosmos and down, and the second movement is the movement of where you raise your arms up to the heavens, as it were, and then down to the earth, bringing the two together in yourself.
No, well said. And I think you'll get some of that in the exercises that I'll introduce tomorrow morning. But the panrhythmic ones almost they involve walking as well as they. Yes, I mean there's some specifically for the feet where you're just really moving the feet, and others moving the hands and arms together. Well, none at all, really. That's the best. If it's not too cold. Yeah. Anyway, I think we probably ought to wrap up. Yeah.
I have a slight concern that the words used, especially love, allow themselves to be interpreted in a variety of ways. And there's a particular emphasis that you're quite legitimately putting on the interpretation. But it's the ways it can be otherwise understood and the tension between these different understandings, which I found a little bit absent from the way you were articulating the process, because it's only too easy to project the less interesting forms of love onto the more interesting articulations that you were offering.
No, it's a good good point, Tony. I recognise some of the similar correspondence that we've been having over the last couple of months. But there is a lot more detail about that. And so he goes into four different levels of love, they're not mutually exclusive. They just become wider, if you like. But I think the one that you'd be most interested in is the love as a principle in the spirit, because this incorporates the opposites and the reconciliation of opposites, and that's part of what we've been corresponding about. Yeah, yeah, totally. Because we all use it in slightly different ways, and it can be used rhetorically, as you say. But I think, I mean, the quotation from Toynbee gives a quite precise understanding of how he's using it. One just has to take note of that and try and articulate that what one's actually trying to say as clearly as possible.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there. David, I have one question before we end, and that's the similarity of terminology which you use when you discuss what Peter Dunoff said and the terminology of Uspensky. One of the concepts that Uspensky had is this idea of accumulators in the body, accumulators of energy, accumulators of emotion. Now, I assume this was a reflection of science in some way, and point of where it got to, and the idea that you could actually store energy. Have you any comments on that? Because it looks as if Uspensky and Dunoff were in some sense coming from the same place there.
Yes, I suppose there's probably some there would be these parallel developments, because they were living through a similar time. And so I think all these teachers elaborated what was inside them, you know, as a way of helping the people they were working with in a particular fashion. And I think it's interesting the way the body comes into this, because the Christian history with the body has not been a terribly constructive one.
Yes.
And I think this is all coming back, and people really do want to express themselves. And that was one of the things that attracted me in the first place to the Dunoff way. It's not only the expression through the body, but also the fact that they're going to the mountains. And so he was a pioneer in what we now call eco-spirituality. But even though he was doing this in the 20s. And so it was pioneering work. And those, nobody went to the Bulgarian mountains, you know, before he started these things up. But now the trouble is there's a ski lift going up there, and so there are far too many people.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's all thank David very much indeed for his presentation. Thank you, David.